Welcome to another edition of What Comes Naturally. We're well off my patch today. We're up in the Yorkshire Dales. I've just driven up in the evening and we're 200 miles north of Cambridge. We're back in early spring. There's no leaves on the ash trees or the alder trees. So if I look in one direction up the valley, it looks like winter. The trees are still all bare. And where I'm looking across the valley to the sycamores and the hawthorn trees on the far side, things look pretty green and lush. The grass is just growing back after being grazed back in the winter. And there are loads of spring flowers along the beck, which you can hear right beside me. There's a very nice campsite rat just run past me. I've been putting my tent up. I've just got to whack the last post in and then we're there. I nearly tripped over that just now. And if I sound a bit breathless, it's because I didn't bring a pump to pump my airbed up. My tent is older than most of you are probably. It's a 1950s French tent and I love it. It's still going strong and I've got it up in the lee of the car right by the beck. You can probably hear the water in the background. And I'm hoping to see lots of birds. I've already had curlews, cuckoo, oyster catcher. It's just getting dark now and the blackbirds and the thrushes are still singing. There's a moorhen just squawking on the other side of the beck. So the plan is to walk down to the pub tonight and have a pint and see if I can find a woodcock on the way flying about and then turn in for the night and then take you out for a good walk tomorrow and finish this podcast. And then on the next day, I'm going to take you probably over looking for red squirrels with a bit of luck and we'll do a podcast from over there. There's the cuckoo calling now. I was too late for the pub. It's still light and it's after 10 o'clock on a Sunday night and so they've closed, which is fine because I can walk back to the tent now along the side of the beck and I've been looking at the flowers as I walk down. Buttercups are out, sweet Sicily that smells of aniseed is the main flower and the wild garlic of course all along the side of the beck. A few bluebells and I said I might see a woodcock. There was one flying right over the pub. And if it flies over my head, I'll point the microphone at it and see if I can get you to hear it. They fly around in a moth-like figure of eight with their long beak pointing down and they go croak, 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 whistle. Or grunt, grunt, whistle. They have three croakers, two croakers. Each one can be told apart if you're really good at it. And they've sadly declined in the southeast, but up here, they seem to be thriving because there's more trees than there used to be in the old days. There's been a lot of planting in the national park. I'm back in the campsite. Boiled up my Kelly kettle, made a cup of coffee. And it's rather good that I missed the pub, actually, because the woodcock wouldn't have been around if I'd been inside. I wouldn't have seen it. And also, I had another one and the bats and it's just been an absolutely beautiful evening. The stars have come up one by one. Jupiter was the first thing that I saw and I got my telescope out and had a look at the moons around Jupiter and the black spot in the middle of Jupiter, which is the big red storm that sits in the middle of the planet there. You can always see that as well. There's no wind. It's been a fantastic evening. Watch the stars come out one by one. The plough is over my head now. There's an oyster catcher just going to bed. Around 11:15, all the gulls left and went off to some unknown tarn up on the hillsides. There's the oyster catcher. Just as I arrived back at the campsite, there was a tawny owl calling as well. It's time for me to call it a day, I think. And we'll get together in the morning, boil up the Kelly kettle again, make some coffee and set out. So I'll just go and work out the zip on my tent and I'll say good night. Well, good morning. I don't know what kind of a night you had, but mine wasn't that comfortable. But that's camping, isn't it? I've got two issues, really. One is that the zip's broken on my tent and this time it's the canvas is so old that it's actually torn away. The zip in my sleeping bag isn't so good either, so one issue is zips and the other one is airbeds. They never work, do they? And they're always too small as well. It's like trying to sleep on a little cushion that keeps getting out of the way. The river is very productive, lots of insects coming off it, and really most of the trees in the valley are just along the sides of the river. It's pretty heavily grazed sheep country, this. So that's where all our life is, masses of stuff going on. It's not a rare sight, but mallard ducks. How many ducklings do they have? 12, 14, something like that? Well, every female I've seen this morning has got ducklings with her. Some are quite big now, and some are small. The survival rate seems to be incredible. Down in the south, on the slow rivers, they seem to get predated very quickly, and you're soon down to one duckling. But we've got whole families still together after a couple of weeks, which is amazing. There's a brood of about two-day-old ducklings, just where the common sandpipers were just now, with their mum, and the familiar flowers all along the bank. The one I always used to like when I was a kid is pignut. It's a little umbellifer, like a parsley-looking thing. Small parsley-shaped leaves, very fine leaves. You hardly notice the leaves, and this thing only grows about 7 or 8 inches tall. It's not a very tall plant at all. You can find it in the south as well, but it's really common at this time of year along the river banks here. And what we used to do is to get a penknife and dig it up. It's called pignut because at the bottom there's quite a big tuber, like a little new potato down there that tastes just like a nut. It's delicious. I'm a bit loath to dig things up these days, but I might dig one up for you later. There's a steep lane that runs down from my grandmother's house and then along the river to the bridge where I've been fishing for a little while. It's a blackcap singing right above my head. And that lane used to be unmade up, and I can remember when the first mini car came down here, its sump hit the rocks, and that was that. It's still very, very narrow. You've got a cliff on the uphill side and a cliff on the downhill side going right into the river. But thank goodness there's this wall that I'm sitting on. Great place to see flycatchers as well, because the ash trees on the downhill side are still bare, and you can see the flycatchers sitting in the trees. I've only seen spotted flycatcher today, but we do get pied flycatcher down here. And I think it's only a matter of time before we get red squirrels down this end of the dale as well. So this little bit of the lane was called the Scrogs because it was the roughest bit. On the cliff bit, there are lots of mosses and liverworts that overhang the road and drip. It's dripping as the spring comes out there all the time. So it gets very icy in the winter when that freezes. But that's where I learned my botany. That's the point of all this. My grandmother really knew her flowers because her father was the gardener at a big country house. And that's where she learned her botany. And she taught me a bit. I must say, I've seen a few things today. I'm not quite sure what they are. But the water avens was a really nice find. There's a saxifrage out, which I've got to look up. And it's just absolutely so full of life along here. The farm next door to my grandmother's house was really a sheep farm, but they had 12 cows. And every morning, my brother and I used to help milk them. Well, I think we called it helping anyway. And the problem was that lane that I told you about, the Scrogs, was too steep for the milk lorry to come and collect the milk. So we had to take it by tractor down the Scrogs, over the Ivelet Bridge and up to the main road where it would be collected. The little bridge on the way is now one of the most photographed spots in the Yorkshire Dales. It's an absolutely beautiful bridge. Every now and again somebody whacks it and knocks the top off the wall, and the chaps have got really, really good at fixing it. But it's a perfect arch reflected in the water underneath. And people stand here and take photographs, and just at the foot of the bridge on one side, you can always see beautiful flowers. At the moment, it's Sweet Cicely that's out, big clumps of that. Later on, loads of meadow cranesbill there. Beautiful sight to see. And on the bank below there, quite often I find otter tracks. As always, I found a bit of the dry stone wall that's been knocked down, and I've been watching a chap today repair it. This beautifully done job. Stones that I could just lift, I suppose, and one or two I'd have a job lifting, done it all by hand. And the most exciting bit, interesting bit, is that there's a tree that's been cut down and the stump is left maybe 2 feet out of the ground, sawn off flat. And I guess people have been sitting on it. So rather than remove it, he's left it there and built the wall over it.
And to stop the wall falling down as the wood gets a bit softer, he's put a lintel across the top. And the lintel is a big piece of limestone that's actually a fossilised piece of riverbed or fossilised piece of seabed. It's got a wave in it. It looks a bit like a row of roof tiles, but it's actually one solid piece of limestone. I don't know where he got that from. Well, obviously it came out of the river originally. But these river stones, of course, got here through the glaciers about 10,000 years ago, ended up dumped all along the hillsides and slowly found their way down to the river where they've got redistributed. They're not all the same, actually. There are several different kinds, and some are rounder and some are square. You can find fossils in them, and sometimes you can find a big lump of galena. That's the ore of lead. In fact, I think I've just found... Yes, I found some lead ore in a rock here. It's not worth getting out. There's not enough of it. The bridge is on the Pennine Way, or a branch of it, and there's been a constant stream of hikers along there today. Quite a few Nordic walkers with their sticks as well. And that's lovely. Loads of them coming along, and they all take pictures of the bridge when they come past. But what they miss is just to the side of the bridge, there's a big slab of stone, and that's a coffin stone. In Catholic times, there's a long way to the nearest church, and so they had to carry the coffin, often on their shoulders, all the way down to Grinton, which is way down near Richmond, about 18 miles away, I think. So they would have to put the coffin down every now and again to take a rest, obviously, and you couldn't just put it down anywhere. That was disrespectful. It had to be on sacred ground. And so along the way, there are these coffin stones that are sanctified, and that's where you can put the coffin during its journey. The Lykewake Walk on the North York Moors is another place like that as well, a wake walk. I'm always drawing attention to this when I catch people walking by and I point things out to them. I'm always nosy, ask them where they're from. Anyway, one day I was standing here and I was pointing out the giant bellflowers to a group of people going past. I said, this is a real Dale specialty, you got to see this. And I'd just been photographing them. And they said, oh, hello, Jim. And it was a group from Hemmingford Grey, who I'd spoken to a few weeks before. I think if you stood here long enough, you'd meet everybody you've ever known in your life, actually. Anyway, look, I've had enough for now. I'm going to go and make a cup of tea back at the tent, and then probably go on another walk, I think, to see if I can see some more woodcock this evening.